We would like to dedicate this episode to Liliana Elena González Castro
and Jouko Kykkänen.
Welcome to the 18th episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in cold and getting colder Helsinki, Finland. I'm one of your hosts, Luis, and with me is your other host, Joonas.
Tervehdys.
In this episode, we will discuss about top X list, which we will constantly misname them as top 10 lists, probably. We will talk about the benefits and challenges of creating such lists, what is the best format for them, what is the benefit for content creators and consumers. But before we get to that, we will review three card games, 6 Nimmt, 3 Chapters, and 4 Sale. So, Joonas, why don't you tell us about 3 Chapters?
I will. I also just now noticed the number thing that kind of like connects all of these games. You have 6 Nimmt, 3 Chapters, and 4 Sale.
Yes.
Okay, 3 Chapters. 3 Chapters is a trick-taking.
I don't think anybody can see that you're doing air quotes when you say trick-taking.
Trick-taking game by Cho Hout. Am I making my air quotes clear enough?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, the reason for my air quotes is that while 3 Chapters has the famous card game mechanic trick-taking in it, the game feels much more like a drafting game. So we're not talking about a classic trick-taking game here. So forget everything you know about trick takers and about the opinions you might have about trick taking. You must approach 3 Chapters as its own thing. You must look past the labels and really see who 3 Chapters really is. Luis, have you heard about 3 Chapters before?
No, unknown person for me.
Okay, well, the German version of the game came out last year in Essen, and now we have the English version. And by the way, these cards have text on them, so it does matter that you and the players around you can read and understand the text that's printed on these cards. Okay, I will now explain the rules of this game, which I have not seen anyone been able to do, because this is one of those games where you explain the rules and the rules will be different of what people expect to hear. And they just don't understand the rules because of this. And then they will ask you questions about the thing that you just told them, and you will repeat the thing you said, and they will look at you blankly and then ask the same freaking question again. How do I know this? Because I have been this person asking the same question over and over again and getting the same exact answer over and over again and not internalizing anything I've heard. And then later, I have also seen someone else being the person asking the same questions I was asking and getting the same response over and over again, but not understanding at all what they are hearing. So here are the rules. There are 3 chapters or 3 phases in the game. Luis, are you ready?
Yes.
Chapter 1. You start with 8 cards in your hand. You choose one, then pass the remaining cards clockwise. Simple drafting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And you continue doing this until all cards are drafted.
Perfect.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Chapter 2. Now we're playing the trick-taking game with the cards that we have drafted. We all play 1 card each. Highest card wins. And the winner gets 2 points. Additionally, after everyone has played their cards, you compare the skills on your cards with one another, as this can earn you additional points.
Okay.
So the skills, what are the skills? So most cards have these additional points. All cards have tags on them. One card can have multiple tags on it, and the tags are things like monster, villain, kids, magical animal. The theme, it's all about fairy tale creatures. You have your classics like the giant and the Jack. But then there are also these like more modern classics for the Gen Zs. I'm talking about Peter Pan and Pinocchio. And the Peter Pan would have the kid tag. You know, Peter Pan is a child. And Pinocchio would have the child tag as well as the magical tag.
Kid or child?
Child.
Oh.
Kid. I can't remember which one is referred in the
rules. Okay, but they're the same. Peter Pan
yes,
and Pinocchio.
Yes.
You're not trying to confuse
no,
me on purpose.
No, I am not.
Okay.
And in addition to the tags, the cards can have a text such as 1 heart for each card with a value of 1 to 9. There's 50 cards in the deck with values from 1 to 50. And if other people played cards between 1 and 9, you would now get 1 heart for each card if you have a card that says 1 heart for each card between the value of 1 to 9. The Jack, for example, of Jack and the Beanstalk, gives you 5 gems if someone else played the giant in the same trick. So highest card wins the trick. You get 2 points. And then we check who gets some extra points.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still with me?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Because here's chapter 3. In chapter 3, finally evaluate the skills within your selected hand cards. They can bring you additional points in this chapter. So do you remember when I talked about those additional points?
Yes.
Yes? Well, now you score them again.
Okay.
Unless those points are specific for chapter 2. So if you only get hearts in chapter 2, then you only get hearts in chapter 2. And then some points are specific for chapter 3. So now you only get them there. But if it's not specified, you get them both in chapter 2 and in chapter 3.
Okay.
Okay, so if I have Cinderella, Cinderella gives me 1 heart for every animal
mm-hmm.
and 2 gems if it's with the fairy godmother.
Okay.
So in chapter 2, in the trick-taking phase, how do I determine how many points I get, Luis?
You get 2 points per trick, but also you get...
Well, you get 1 heart for every
animal.
You get
hearts. Yeah. You get hearts and gems.
Yeah, exactly. How about in chapter 3?
Well, you do the same, but with your selected hand, which I don't know what that means. I don't know if selected hand is different than you just check your tricks that you won.
Ah, here's the thing. Yeah. Because the selected hand is the cards that you drafted in the beginning.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So whatever you win
yeah.
doesn't matter at all. Like you don't get to take any cards as you win them.
Okay.
So you draft cards saying like, oh, there's a combo here.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of getting the points immediately in chapter 1, you play first a trick-taking game. And then you also say that, hey, by the way, I drafted these things and now I get points for this thing.
Okay.
And this somehow... It's just like a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's like messes with people's head all
yeah.
the time. And this is one of those games where you just kind of like want to say to people, let's just play one round.
Okay.
And then the thing will make perfect sense. You won't have any questions after that.
Okay.
But all right, let's get serious. 3 chapters is tons of fun. I have played 5 games of it with 5 and 6 players. It has all the fun parts of drafting where you try to predict what others try to pick and
mm-hmm.
then trying to like outthink them. And then the trick-taking itself, even though it's not a trick-taker's trick-taker and can sometimes be a bit chaotic, it's such a fun shared experience. The high cards that win easily don't usually have a lot of additional points available for them. So you can easily win the game without winning a single trick by just matching a lot with other players. So there will be moments where you are leading the trick and you will just go, hey, let's get all the children out. Everyone play kids. Let's all play kids. Because I want to play my Peter Pan. And then someone holding a Geppetto, who will also get a lot of points from kids, gets into the action. It's like, yeah, 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 let's all play kids, even though it's not their turn yet. So it's just like this really fun energy that happens around the table. Just want to mention about the different combos that you can have. Red Queen is OP. So
okay.
if anyone plays that, boo the player. It's completely broken, that card.
Okay, take it out of the game.
Yes. How excited are you at this moment, Luis?
Pretty excited. Still pretty confused. Like, I didn't understand if you are restricted to, like, which cards are going to give you which points, or it's just, like, all of the cards that you selected at the beginning in the drafting will give you points both in Chapter 2 and in Chapter 3.
Yes.
Okay, but only the cards you selected doesn't matter the tricks that you won.
No, but in Chapter 2...
You do get 2 points per trick that you won.
Exactly. In Chapter 2, you get 2 points per trick that you won, but you still can match with people even if you don't have the highest card.
Yeah, but what I didn't understand, because now you said that you let's play all the kids... It's like whether or not it matters that they are in the same trick.
Yes, it matters that they're in the same trick because then you have to like match with other players.
Yeah. So the matching only happens within the trick, within the constraint of the trick.
Yes.
So like Cinderella being with the fairy godmother has to be on the same trick that got played.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It cannot be that like, oh, in the next trick, somebody played the fairy godmother.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, now I kind of got it, yeah.
Yep. Another thing that like tripped me up was this theme of the game because... You have, for example, Jack and the Giant.
Yeah.
So when I had the Jack, I thought that, okay, I don't want to play Jack with the Giant, right? Because the
mm-hmm.
Jack tries to hide from the Giant.
Yeah.
Wrong. That's not how you play 3 chapters. You just want to try to combine the things to our shared theme. It doesn't matter who eats who kills who. It's about whether they make sense story-wise. So you want to play your Goldilocks with the 3 bears.
You know which game this sounds a bit, not mechanically, but at least like the idea of? Have you ever played Fantasy Realms?
No. I have heard so many people compare to this to Fantasy Realms, and now I'm very excited to try that.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah, like because I have Fantasy Realms, and I played it with Mia quite a lot, but also like with more people. I think it works quite well with 2, and maybe it doesn't work that well with 4. Never played with 3, and it's kind of this game where like you have very specific combos where like you have a suit of a card and a type of a card, and then you have names, and I think you also have tags. I don't remember exactly, but you have similarly like the text, like the ranger. If this card has animals with it, or if you have, and you're trying to kind of build a hand of
yes.
a certain number of cards, and then you're kind of, there's mechanics where like you can change a card to the center or just top deck a card, but then you have to drop a card. So you always have the same number of cards in your hand and you're trying to make the best combination. So definitely there's no trick taking, but it sounds like the combination factor is, it's a little bit there, but this is more like you're working for yourself. You don't see what other people are doing. And like getting familiar with the cards is like what, okay, now today I'm going to try to do the animal. And then next time it's like the prince and the princess. And the next time the undead king with like multiple undead cards. So
exactly. But here's like the cool thing with three chapters. I've noticed that in the first games, when people are playing for the first time, people want to draft those high cards because they're thinking the game as like a trick taker. It's like higher card is a better card. And then you can kind of like see the drafting change in the second game. As people realize like, oh, higher card is not necessarily the best card.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I feel like if you're playing with newbies, you want to draft higher cards with them because they don't know how to match with you yet.
Mm.
But then in the second game, you kind of see people understanding like, I want to actually take Cold Deluxe, even though Cold Deluxe is a very weak card because I will get a lot of points when someone plays those three bears. And then, you know, you take the three pairs knowing that someone will take those Cold Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can still, you get like a nice combo with them and you might even win the trick with the three pairs. So even someone else got more points with their Cold Deluxe, you also got like a handsome pile of points.
Do hearts and diamonds matter?
Yeah. So there's like these three categories of points, hearts, gems, stars. It's a bit confusing. It's kind of like all points. It's just like a different amount of points.
Okay.
So I really wanted to solve the combos, try to like find out all the different combinations and synergies that exist in the deck. So I would have loved if this game would have worked as a two-player game because I honestly, I might want to play repeated games of this with Chilla instead of like having like a set group.
Yeah.
But the two-player game does not seem great because in a two-player game, you have like a dummy hand that you draw blindly from. So you miss like a lot of those fun table talk moments and waiting for the right moment to play your Geppetto to get all the kids because you don't never know what's going to come out from the top of the deck. So I think the ideal scenario for this game is me and Chilla and some other couple such as you and Mia. And we are in a cottage and we just want to keep playing the same game over and over again. Mm-hmm. And three chapters would be the perfect game for that. However, this is not a very realistic scenario, and I have to be realistic about what games I will get played and what I should own. So because of that, I did not get my own copy of three chapters, even though I thoroughly enjoyed the game. But I'm always down for a game, and I'm happy recommending this game for anyone who is kind of like getting excited about it. That was three chapters.
All right. Now I'm going to talk about Six Nimmt, also known as Take Six or Take Five or Five Takes All, or I think this has been translated to different names depending on the publisher. I think this also has been published by a million publishers, probably originally by Amigo, because this is a game from 1994. This is an oldie. So from last year's game to one of the oldest games we've ever talked about, this was designed by Wolfgang Kramer, the famous designer of El Grande, and from the designer duo Kramer and Kisling, which you probably have heard a lot about. And by the way, Jonas, did you know that Colosseum, which is designed by Wolfgang Kramer, is getting a reprint this year?
I actually did know that.
Okay, yeah. That actually sounds like a really interesting game. It's one of those old games that I would like to try. But anyway, going back to the review, this game, it's featuring a very weird cow iconography. Back in the day, this used to be very clearly a cow, and I think it's a word game.
Isn't it a bull?
It's like a bull, yeah, like a bull with bull, cow, I don't know, I think it looks like a, well, anyway.
Because isn't the whole thing that, you know, in German, you would say that someone is a bullhead, meaning that they are a person who gets angry very fast and very easily.
Ah, maybe, I didn't know that. I knew that there was like some wordplay for the name. But anyway, nowadays, the newer versions just have this silhouette of a bull or a cow. They don't have the image of the bull or the cow, which to me actually looks very creepy. It looks like a spider. Like, it doesn't make sense if you don't know that there used to be a bull there. So everybody, when I showed this game, they were like, what the hell is that supposed to be? Anyway, this game includes card numbers from 1 to 104. And each card displays one big central number, which represents its value, which is from 1 to 104. But more importantly, each card also has a number of dots or cow symbols on the top of the card, which indicate how many negative points this card will give you. This is a simultaneous action game where each player begins with 10 cards. So I think depending on the number of players, this might change. But 10 cards and has to play one card per round. This is appearing a card shedding game, but it's not really because every player plays just one card every round and we are all shedding at the same time. The point of the game is to get the fewest possible creepy cow symbols or creepy spider symbols, however you want to call it. And the way you do this is by selecting what card, which you're going to play every round. In the middle of the table, at the same time you're selecting the card, there is four rows of cards, which each row can take up to five cards. That's why the game is called Take Five or Six Nymph, because I think it's like the six takes it all, because the row can only take up to five cards. It starts by having one card at the beginning randomly taken from the top of the deck, and there will always be at least one card in each row. So you have space for up to four extra cards. Once you reveal the deck, the cards, everybody reveals at the same time, you start from the lowest card and you allocate it into the row that it fits. And the way you determine if it fits or not is like it's the row that has the closest available number downwards. So if you have a 51, the closest available number will be a 50, right? So if you have a 51, it will probably go wherever there's a 50 or a 49 or a 48 or something like that. I'm doing a terrible job at explaining this.
Do you think anyone is able to kind of like listen to the rules of Six Nymph and understand the game, no matter who would explain it and no matter how well they would explain it?
I thought I had done a great job at explaining, but now that I'm really listening to myself, I'm like, yeah, maybe that doesn't sound that good.
I just think it's like so abstract, the explanation.
Yeah, I think so. And at least, well, let me just finish the explanation and then I can talk a little bit about it. But so you have the rows and then you're trying to put in the closest row. So that, let's say that there's like a 55. So and in the rows, there's like a 50 and a 53. Then your 55 will always be next to the 53, no matter whether there's space or not. And the point of the game is that if you are the person that is putting the sixth card on the row, you have to take the entire five cards that were on that row, and then you leave your card there as the first card of that row for the next round. So sometimes, even if you don't want to put your 55 next to that 53, you would rather put it next to that 50 because there's still space, you have to put it next to the 53 because that's the rules. The rules is like wherever it fits. Now, the other thing that you can do is that if you have a low card, which doesn't fit anywhere because it's too low to fit anywhere, then the rule goes that you have to take one of the rows and then replace all of the cards in that row with the card that you're selecting. And that's why you always start with the smallest card and then you go higher, because sometimes that small card will wreck the entire flow of the round. So yeah, maybe nobody will get it, but it's one of those games that also, like, once you start playing it, immediately after the first round or the second round, you understand. And this game, despite appearing like a card shedding game or like a card selection game and a simultaneous action, is more accurately a mind game. You're like playing the players, you're not playing the game. So you're trying to avoid disadvantageous moves that result in collecting many points, but it's often involves in a dilemma. It's like, okay, if I put this 55, it fits there next to the 53, but there's only one space available. What if somebody has the 54? And if somebody puts the 54, then I'm going to put the 55 and I have to take the row. Obviously, when there's only one card or two in between the options, it's not likely that somebody will play it, but you never know, you know? And sometimes you're like, okay, this card fits perfectly on that row or where it's next to a single card, but then for whatever reason, sometimes somebody plays a very small card, takes away that big card, and then your card goes next to a row of five. So definitely, it's one of those games that, as you say, people don't understand it. So it's like, let's play it. And then after a few rounds, it's like, what's the point of this game? Like, it's just so silly. It's just so simple. And then after a few more rounds, or at the end of the first game, people are like, ah, I see what's going on here. I see how to play the game. But I think it takes a couple of games. And this is a game that takes 15 minutes. 20 minutes stop. So it's like a game that goes super fast.
No, does it take 20 minutes? Because you have to play until what score? Like you will shuffle the deck multiple times.
That is true. So each round of 10 takes 15 minutes.
Yes.
10 minutes. And yeah, the game, I think, yeah, you're right. It's until 60 points or something.
Yeah,
until
so you somebody will end up playing two or three rounds maybe.
But it's not until maybe after the whole first game, which includes like two, three or four rounds, that people are like, ah, okay, now I get it. Because at the beginning, it's very easy to be like, okay, I'll put the next card that fits in the row that has the fewest cards. I'll put my next available. But if you start doing that in the first round, towards the end of the rounds, you are stuck because you have cards that go nowhere. So sometimes you have to play a little bit more advantageously and start thinking, okay, what will throw a wrench into this round so that maybe more people are going to take more points? Or also like maybe I will play this low card now and take the hit now, but then that opens up more opportunities for me to put the rest of my cards later. So I think it's a surprisingly thinky game. Now, obviously, depending on how many players you play with, if it's six people, I think the game becomes more of a chaotic probability game where like, okay, probably this card might not give me points, but it's as likely as it is unlikely that you might just get screwed by the rest of the players. But if you're playing with three or four this game, I think it's more like a man game of like, what do I think the other players are going to play and how can I play the most optimally my set of cards that I have?
I have only played Six Nimmt with five or six players. The first time I played Six Nimmt, it was a complete riot.
Yeah.
There was one person who brought the game for us. We were all learning it for the same time. We were just like laughing out loud so much during the game. Now, it's been all downhill from that game. I have not gotten the same high I got from my first game. I understand that there's like decisions that you can make. I'm not complaining about the lack of decisions. It's just that the emotions that I have when I play Six Nimmt these days, it's like either it's, phew, I was able to get the card there just in time, or it's like, oh no, I have to take all the cards.
Yeah.
But there isn't like this nice build up to those actions. It's going to change with every like new card you play in. So it's not like you're building up to this combo later on, just like gambling for this one card. No, it's just all the time like, phew, or oh no. And that's just it. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. I know many people love Six Nimmt.
Yeah.
And I have had that one amazing game of it, but I don't know. I'm not like excited about Six Nimmt at all anymore.
This is one of those games that I think is very easy. It's very accessible for casual gamers. I play this a lot with my family in Mexico. Yeah. I bought it to play with them and then they really enjoy it. And it's again, like a game that you can just take out, play one round. It's until 66 points. Now I checked, by the way. Huh. Play one game of it, which includes like 2-3 rounds. And then you put it away and then you can play it again later or at the next weekend. So that's, for me, works really well. My family likes a lot of card games. I think from the history of playing card games with my grandma and stuff like that. So it's like really a card game like this appeals to them quite a lot for like an easy going afternoon.
Hey, I love an easy going afternoon game. It's just that I feel like within the same category, with the same amount of rules heaviness, you will find games that give you kind of like more emotion, a better arc. Now, I'm not going to list those games because we have to save those games for later episodes because we need to have like a proper discussion about this whole topic.
Yeah.
However, I'm going to throw one game at you.
Mm-hmm.
Kapanga.
Mm-hmm.
You have played that with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually bought that game as well last time I was in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
It did not hit as happy with my family as Six Nimmt did.
Yeah. How? Yeah. What was the issue with Kapanga? And before, you know, like we have to explain what Kapanga is.
Yeah.
Kapanga is like almost the same exact thing with Six Nimmt. You try to put your numbers between the different ranges. However, not like in Six Nimmt when, you know, you bust, you have to take a lot of cards. When you bust, a lot of other people get to throw cards at you.
Yeah.
Physically, they will take aim and hit you with that card as hard as they can.
Yeah.
So that creates that tension to the game.
Yeah.
It's not about, oh, do I have to take cards? Do I not have to take cards? It's like, will I get a card in my eye?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I get it. But I guess like it also, I guess you're not putting enough importance about your choices in Six Nimmt then, Jonas. Because if you were, and like you're like, hey, this is a card that will give me, that will go there because I think what these players are going to do is that, then you would, every decision, or at least most of the decisions, would feel very tense. We're like, okay, will I get it or will I get screwed by somebody? So it's like, definitely.
Yeah, but I'm having that emotion. But then there's two outcomes to it. Either I got screwed or I didn't get screwed. Well, but I have to like, I live in that emotion for like, what, 10 seconds. And then it's a new emotion. Everything's wiped clear. Nothing matters. There's no build up.
So you want a card in your eye so that you can get angry at your friends and family?
Yes. I want to sit for like 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Looking at my cards, waiting for it to come to my turn and thinking for the whole time, am I going to get hit by cards? This one's going to throw that card into my forehead. Because last time it was my turn to throw cards, I threw that card so hard at him.
All right.
So get that six nymph out of my face. It has like no competition against Kapanga.
Well, I don't know. Kapanga didn't feel as exciting. I guess I need to throw cards harder. But yeah, that was six nymph from Wolfgang Kramer. Now let's talk about For Sale, a game from 1997 from designer Stefan Dorra, famous designer of cricket. Nothing you have heard before unless you remember that Jonas randomly talked about Sardinia. But I tried to look for like games of Stefan Dorra and I knew I have heard his name before. But that's it. Like, there's not that many. There's a lot of games, but nothing that really stands out besides For Sale, Sardinia, and Batam, which is like the re-implementation of Sardinia, which is also coming out this year, I think. Anything else? I couldn't really find something that caught my eye. So he's been pretty prolific. He did Skull Queen, which is like the re-implementation of Skull King. But again, like, kind of like, anyway, it's not about talking about designers, this particular
No. Let's podcast. Continue. If we talk about card games, Njet is a very beloved trick-taking game by Stefan Dorra. And I think, is it Waschstickt?
Which one?
Is also by him.
That's just because you love trick-taking games and you know everything about it. But as your average board gamer, they will not know anything about.
Sorry, Waschstickt is not by Dorra. I think it's, what is it?
Tonga Bonga is also from Stefan Dorra.
Yeah, let's not talk about Tonga Bonga.
All right, so yeah, you have heard a lot about Stefan Dorra because Jonas somehow has talked a lot about Stefan Dorra, but it's not particularly known as or I don't think many of his games are particularly known in the hobby. Anyway, For Sale, let's go back to the game. This game is all about real estate speculation, Jonas. But to be honest, in a really nice and simple way. The game is divided into two rounds. And first, you're going to be bidding for houses, which are represented by cards with cute little illustrations. They go from a hole in the floor or a card box or a doghouse all the way up to space stations and mansions. The cards are numbered from 1 to 30, and the mechanics are very straightforward. There are as many cards in the middle of the table as there are players, and each player starts with a set number of coins, which I believe is 14. Or it depends on the number of players, but for four players, it's 14. And you start bidding. And you are bidding basically to stay in the round. As soon as you don't want to bid or you want to pass, you go out of the round and you take the lowest value card that is still available in the middle of the table. And you continue going around until everybody passes, in which case the player who made the biggest bet will have to pay all of their money to the bank. And all of the players that pass have to play their money rounded up to the bank. And at some point, if you run out of coins or if you cannot outbid an opponent, then you have to pass and you have to take whatever is on the table. So you do this for several rounds, depending on the number of players, let's say six rounds or five rounds. And therefore, you would have six or five cards with different numbers and different cute little illustrations of houses in your hand. And then you go to the second phase of the game, in which there will be four cards which are valued, and the values go from 0 to 15, skipping the 1, and there's two of each value. So there's two zeros, two twos, two threes, two 14s, two 15s, and everything in between except ones. Whereas like you will have four different values in the table, and everybody will, similarly to Six Nymph, select a card hidden, face down, and everybody will reveal at the same time. And whoever had the highest value card will take the highest value number in the middle of the table, and whoever has the lowest will take the lowest, and everything in between will be distributed accordingly. The point of the game is to have the most money at the end of the game, and you count your money by considering the cards that you got in the second phase of the game, and also, and very importantly, considering the money that you kept from the first round of the game, the money that you didn't use on those bids. And yeah, whoever has the most money wins. This is very fast-paced game. I think this is a game that you can easily play in 20 minutes, maybe a little bit more if people are thinking 30 minutes. It's super easy. It's super interesting. A lot of good decision making that depends a lot on the cards that are on the table. For example, in the first phase, if there is cards that are very similar in value, probably nobody will bid anything. Like if there's like a 12, 13, 14, and 15, then people will pass because what's the difference? I'm not going to pay money to get a 15 instead of getting a 12, right? However, if the spread is quite big, you have the 1 and you have the 30, then for sure people will start spending money. But as soon as some person takes that one, then everybody else starts passing. And similarly, in the second phase, you might have the spread quite narrow. You might have a 7, an 8, a 9, and a 10, or two 7s, an 8, and a 9. Then people will probably not use their best cards for that, because what does it matter? I can spend my 1 and still get a 7. Whereas if the spread is quite big, you will probably see those big numbers being thrown around. And it's a game, similarly to Six Nymphs, in my opinion, that generates a lot of like ha-ha-ha moments where like you think you're going to get the biggest card, you play your 29, and then somebody else plays their 30, and then you end up getting a 0 or a 2 instead of a 15 or a 14 that you thought you would have gotten. So it's like another game that I think you're playing the people, not the game, and that generates a lot of funny moments and a lot of interesting moments for bluffing and for trying different things. Quick, easy, fun, excellent game, in my opinion, has stood the test of time. Have you played For Sale?
I have. And I would say it's a flawless, flawless game. However, I don't know, is there enough spice in For Sale? Like, where's the spice? Where's the je ne sais quoi of For Sale?
You're saying that the je ne sais quoi, the kabanga, is the throwing cards in your face?
No, because able to say what the thing is, and it's no longer a je ne sais quoi. Are you aching right now to play For Sale?
No.
Are you aching to show For Sale to more people?
So this is a good question, because if I had the game in my possession in Finland, then I would for sure be aching to show it to more people. This is one of those games that I would take to the meetup easily, every time.
Over Biblios?
Over Biblios. I don't know. Yeah, for sure.
No, okay. I thought you were going to say, no, not over Biblios. How on earth can you say that?
For Sale is for 6 people. Biblios goes up to 4.
And that's the great thing about For Sale, that, hey, we can play this with 6 people?
We can play this with 6 people?
Okay, let's think about optimal player count here. So let's
optimal,
not think...
Optimal player count for a meetup group is 6. No, it's not 4.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to ask you, like, what is the best player count out there? I'm just saying that, okay, for every game... Yeah. You know what? Let's say we have 4 people. Yeah. Let's say we have 4 people here. You're picking For Sale over Biblios.
If we had 4 people,
yes,
here, I would maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. That's, like, it really depends on, again, like, I think Biblios has a bigger
tension.
No,
there's tension. No, there.
Yeah, tension for people to like it. I think people that are not board gamers, like my family, might not enjoy Biblios.
That might be true.
Whereas I think For Sale is a game that you can play with whoever and everybody will understand it and enjoy it quite easily. And I think that's the point. And that's the main difference. Like, this is For Sale, I would take every time to the meetup. Biblios only if I know that I would have the four group, or maybe circumstantially.
So the great thing about For Sale is that it goes up to 6 people.
Also, yeah, but
yeah. So you kind of like, when you're playing it, you're kind of thinking like, oh, it would be so great if Biblios would be available for 6 people, then I could play
Biblios. Yeah, but I think also, like, I mean, if you think about it, I think Biblios shines when people know how to play Biblios, whereas For Sale can shine and give you a lot of fun even if you don't know how to play Biblios. Like, I think you have to play Biblios 2 or 3 times to kind of get the intricacies of Biblios. And in order to do that with a new person, you would probably not enjoy a game of Biblios with 3 random players as much as you would enjoy a game of For Sale with 3 random players.
Now, I don't know about that. I mean, I hear your
argument.
With
3 random new players.
I know. I hear your argument. It's not a bad argument. Let me think about that.
And you would probably win a game of Biblios.
What would be the annoying moments for me? Why would I get annoyed by the new players?
No, I don't think you would get annoyed. I said that you wouldn't enjoy.
Yes, but what would prevent that?
It's just like they would just not play optimally. So you would like,
yeah,
they would play.
They try to go for 3 different colors.
Yeah, exactly. So they would just play wrong.
To go for 1.
And then you would be like, okay, like, so you would enjoy it if you enjoy showing the game to people, which I don't think I would particularly enjoy showing either of them, like, for the enjoyment of showing the game and spreading the word of either of these games to the world. This is not the hill where I'm going to die, in the For Sale or the Biblios hill. So because of that, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I want to play a game that is engaging and enjoyable and that everybody will have fun. And I think I would have less fun playing Biblios with 3 new players than a game of For Sale.
That's true. But But I guess in my fantasy world, what will happen with these three new players is that they play the first game. They go for too many colors. They try to compete with me with one color. Yeah. Some other player wins because, you know, they got lucky because they didn't match with the other people. Yeah. Now, what will happen next is that the players will be like, okay, now I know how to play the game. Shuffle, deal. Let's go again. Whereas with for sale, come on.
And then it will take one or two more games for them to actually.
No, you get it. No. You get it on the second game.
No, you get it, but like you played wrong. Like it's like, yeah, I think I get it. And then you don't get it. Anyway, I think you're thinking of For the King and Me. I think that's the game that you have had a lot of fun with.
Yeah, so that is true. I have played both Biblios and For the King and Me, and I like playing For the King and Me more with family. However, it's much easier and faster to say Biblios, and more people know Biblios than For the King and Me. I think in practice, they're almost the same game. And this review is not about For the King and Me and Biblios.
We have reviewed Biblios before.
No, we have talked about it being in your top 10 list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but okay. I guess For Sale is now going to take that place. Or is it?
I don't know. I really enjoyed playing it this time, but I only play when I'm in Mexico.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that it also has a special place in my heart because I don't get to play it when I'm here. I don't need to buy it while I'm here. It's one of those games that like easy to get out, card game. People understand in Mexico. We have played several times. So it's like, it's nice to be like, hey, what do you want to play? Oh, what about that game of For Sale? Yeah, sure. Let's do that. Yeah. So it's kind of like also an interesting interaction there with the game. So I don't know. Exactly.
Yeah, and but I'm being a contrarian here on purpose. I think it's generally a loved game. If someone says that they are thinking about getting For Sale, I would not have any objections. I think I would say to them like, hey, I think you're going to have a great time with the game.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a game that I would recommend for people to like, if they're exploring games, that this is a game for sure I could recommend. Like, yeah, you should buy it. If you're newer to the hobby, then it's just like, yeah, you should buy it. Or if you're looking for a easy beating card game, I think it's also good.
Yeah, I have not done the math, but I think I would have 12 other games before For Sale.
We have already talked too much about this because you wanted to talk about Biblios, but I think that's also another thing, like the player interaction here, which I'm not saying that Biblios does not have it because of course it has it. It's like still like the take that moment of like, oh, you're gonna beat 8? Okay, I'm gonna beat 9, and I know this is a bad idea, but whatever. And I think Biblios has that beating afterwards. But like you're somewhat restricted with the cards that you have and you cannot bluff as much. Or I mean, you cannot bluff either in For Sale, but like
the mood is different. I agree. Like the beating mood is different.
Yeah, that mood is just like you're starting the game with the beating. So you're just like, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to spend 14, all of my coins for that 30. And later I'm just going to take whatever card is left. But I think that that's also like really like it creates nice, enjoyable moments that are also like are a bit take that. Not that punishing, but still lets you feel like, you're fighting for the cards.
Yes, and you get to laugh at other players a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're out of the round. You have taken one card and people are still bidding for like a 20. And I'm like, really? You're spending that much? So yeah, For Sale. That was the review for Sale. Let's now move on to the topic of the episode. Top X lists. Jonas, what is a top X list?
Top X list is a top 10 list. I know you said in the beginning that, you know, we are going to confuse top X lists with top 10 lists all the time here. I did all of my prep for top 10 lists.
Ah, okay.
I have no interest about top 5 lists or top 15 lists. Top 10, that's the classic, Luis. It's top 10.
But let's say, what is a top 10 list?
What is a top 10?
Yeah.
Well, a top 10 list, I think it's a ranking of items, one being the best. 10 being, well, you wouldn't say worst out of those 10, but usually the 10th thing is still kind of like, hey, this is in the top 10 of the whole world of all the possibilities that could have gotten to the list.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that made it, but it's still the worst of the bunch.
All right, Jonas, that's a wrong definition of top 10. Top 10 list is the crown jewel of content creation. This is the thing that most content creators in different genres, but mostly YouTube and podcasts rely on to give concise and clickable and shareable information to their audience, which is engaging and informative and also has a psychological appeal. I mean, this is a random, random definition that I got, but that is the correct definition of top 10.
Are you reading ChatGPT to me?
No.
Like, so whose definition is this? Is this
Liz's definition? This is my definition. Yes. But this is the important thing. You forgot to mention crown jewel, content creation, content, Jonas. So why is it the crown jewel?
Why is it the crown jewel? Is it because it's shiny? Is it made out of rare gems?
I think the psychological appeal thing, which is something that did come from my investigation through Wikipedia and ChatGPT, was an interesting thing. Like, why do people search for top 10 lists? I read a lot of fantasy books. I've read most of the major fantasy books that are out there. So when I'm looking for new books to read, I always go and try to find top 10 lists. The problem is that most top 10 lists from BookTube, which is YouTube for book content creators, they're always repeating the same things. So you have to then go into alternative things, which is the beauty of top 10s. You can go to like top 10 underrated, top 10 romantasy books, top 10 dark academia. Now I'm talking about books, but you can do the same with board games. If you think you have already said your top 10 games, then you can go into like time specificity. You can say top 10 games of 2025. You can even go like what we did, top 10 games that we played in 2025. If you don't like that, if you think that people are tired of board games of 2025, then you can be like, okay, let's now talk about top 10 games of this designer. Or let's talk top 10 area control games. You can even go into, hey, what hasn't been done? A top 10 games for 6 players, top 10 games for 4 players, top 10 games for playing in a meetup, in a rowdy setup, in a bar. You can expand the top 10 list to unimaginable stretches, Jonas, and still make the content appeal to someone. So this is why it's a crown jewel, and I think this is the beauty. But what do you particularly like about top 10? Or do you like top 10 lists, Jonas?
These days, I do not like top 10 lists that much. Yeah, I used to like them much more. And this was before I started hanging out in board gaming discords.
Yeah.
So before entering those communities, I would get a lot of information about great games that are out there, or like games that I did not know about, or got like a bad review somewhere else, and then someone else is like highlighting it in their top 10. So I got that information from these top 10 lists. But these days I get the same information from board game communities, and I feel like it's just like much more valuable information, because it's not some guy making a list about something, but I can see kind of like multiple people coalescing around the same opinions. It's not the groupthink thing. It's just like you can watch the conversation and the debate about a game. Because, you know, a lot of the great games have spikes in them.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone likes them, right? So it's great to see those two opinions come together and like people like hashing it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just much more entertaining to watch than a list of top 10 games made by someone.
But you consume a lot of content creation.
Yes.
Are you saying now that you, when they make a top 10 list, you click away?
So,
like, or you like, you're like, yeah, I'm not gonna watch it anymore.
Well, if it would be from a channel where, you know, you usually do not see top 10 lists in, and then they do a top 10 list, it's kind of like interesting to see, like, oh well, what's so special about this top 10 list? But if we're talking about Dice Tower, for example, with its top 10 lists, it's pretty easy to click away from those things.
But that's the main thing, Jonas. You have the time to go into discords. I personally don't. Therefore, I don't have the time to go and investigate and read what random people on the internet are saying about specific games and what they like about it and what they don't. I have, however, the time to listen sometimes like, oh, I want a new game. Where do I find it? Let's go to top 10 lists. Mm. What are people talking about? Now, the problem with top 10 lists, or a big problem with top 10 lists, is that they get outdated. It's very hard to maintain the content engaging for a long time. So if I've already made a top 10 favorite games of all time, for example, or top 10 game for 2 players, it'll be really hard that list will change. Therefore, it's very hard to update the list. Like, it would be...
It's hard to change? You mean like it will change, like that list will change, but then you can't go back to update it?
No, like if I already have like a set of games, like maybe one game will change next year. Like maybe I'll play a couple of games and then the list will change by 2 games. But then the rest of the content will stay pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Right? So like it would need to, I think would need to take 2 or 3 years in order for the content to become re-engaging for somebody. If I already talked about my top 10 favorite 2-player games, or if I already seen a channel talk about their favorite top 2-player games, if they come out with the same or a very similar video 1 year from now, it will be like, okay, like that's content that is not good because it's going to be bad content. Like, it's going to be like the same things that I already heard.
Yeah, so if it would be Lewis's top 10 two-player games, 2025 update, and then I click it, and it's Lewis saying like, yeah, now I'm switching number 6 with number 7.
Yeah.
But I think the rest of the list is still good.
If your channel or your podcast or whatever is growing, I think it makes sense to do it because then there will be people that didn't see the previous content. But for channels or podcasts that are not growing that much, I think it would be really hard to justify updating the lists. So maybe you do one and then it stays there. However, if we think about how a solution for this, like if you put the list maybe on a website or as an article that is a supporting website to Board Game OK, like BoardGameOK.com, then you could maybe update that article every year or something like that without necessarily having to have a new episode for a top list. Another thing that it's hard come to terms with top 10 list is that, in my opinion, is that a lot of people have very similar opinions. Like, a lot of people are talking about the hype games or the famous games, like top area control games. And people will talk about El Grande.
Yeah, if El Grande is not on that list, I'm going to get angry.
Yeah. That's the funny thing. Like, there might be some people that haven't played El Grande. And it's good to be like challenged, like, hey, have you played El Grande? But if they haven't, it's just like, okay, what are you doing? Right? But I mean, there's many games that we haven't played, which obviously questions our ability to review games in the grand scheme, in the grand scheme of things. But still, I think it's hard to separate the hype and the kind of the fame of a game from the actual thoughts of a content creator. It's like, what if I don't like El Grande that much? Which would be weird. But then if I don't put it...
You failed the test.
I failed the test. And exactly. Think people would be like, oh, do I really care about what Luis is saying? So it's like, okay, I have to put it somehow, which probably I would like it. But still, like, it's sometimes like it feels that it's very repetitive. And if you see different channels, very few channels will talk about significantly different games. Unless it's channels that are specifically devoted to a particular genre, like a solo gaming channel or something like that. Now, what is your favorite kind of top 10 list, Jonas?
Lewis, I have made a top 10 list of Dice Tower top 10 lists.
Okay.
Do you want to hear it?
All right. Yeah, let's go.
All right. So this is Jonas's top 10 Dice Tower top 10 lists. First of all, let's get these out of the way, because the first three lists, they need a very special shout out. I'm talking about number 10, top 10 games that start with the letter D. Shout out to letter D. Number 9, top 10 games that start with the letter P. Shout out to letter P. Number 8, top 10 games that start with the letter T. Shout out for letter T. Number 7, top 10 games to play at a wedding. Now, this might be useful information for me, because I'm always on the lookout for games that I can play in family gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, top 10 years in board games. I want to know what have been the best years. And I think it's just fun to think whether people appreciated a specific board game vintage back in the day when the games were being released.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, top 10 designers. I want to watch this video just to see who are the idiots who don't put Dr. Knizia at number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, top 10 essential games for gamers. With this one, I'm just curious to know what Dice Tower thinks this should be. So this is just me being curious.
Have you watched any of these?
No. Number 3, top 10 essential games for gamers.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
is it the
not
same?
The same. Yeah. No, this is number 3, top 10 games we hate.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see Dice Tower being edgy.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, top 10 games not to play with an angry person.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play this with an angry person is a great way to sell a game to me, because I do want to play a game with an angry person and then see that person turn into Hulk in front of my eyes. Number 1, top 10 games that should be in the BGG top 10. So this one has lots of room for spicy takes, and this is probably one of those lists that would result into me screaming at the video about some truly awful picks, because I'm pretty sure that they're going to make some really bad picks about these top 10 games that should be in the BGG top 10. That's my top 10 list.
Ah, that's a great top 10 list of things that you haven't watched. But yeah, see, you provide concise information in a very good format, clickable, shareable, and psychological appeal, man. We just got 10 new listeners right there. Thank you, Jonas. All right. Now it's going to be my time to appeal to you, Jonas, of why we should, and we're not going to make a decision in this podcast, but why we should, you asked me the other day, what what are we providing to the world of board games if we create top 10 lists? Like, what is our voice saying? And this is where I say to you, I think we have to consider that point that I told you about books. It's like sometimes when bigger board game channels that are people are listening and people are getting to, and people are just getting bombarded with the same information, those channels get review copies. Those channels get the newest and the best board games. Those channels are always talking about games that people are anyway talking about. So if we do top 10 list, I would imagine that people would appreciate what we have to say because we don't get that. We are like your average board gamer. And therefore, we could provide different information than any of those big channels. New information? Maybe not, but different. So when people are looking for top 10 lists, normally they don't have the time to go into Discord communities. They're just looking for, hey, I've already heard what Dice Tower has to say. I already heard what Shut Up and Sit Down has to say. I already heard what Board Game Barrage has to say. I have played those games. I want something new. I want to hear what somebody else that is not getting the new games has to say. Where do you go? Board Game OK. And that is where we help audiences discover new games without them having to go into these bigger communities. At the same time, I think we have to think that maybe some of our audience will not be board gamers. They will be hopefully starting their board game hobby career, their board game hobby life with listening to us. Or they're trying to dip their toes into something a bit heavier. And that's where they don't want to listen to Tom Vassell. They don't want to listen to Tom Brewster. They want to listen to Jonas Kukkonen. They want to listen to Luis Rodriguez. And I think that is why we should still consider making top 10 lists in this channel as a somewhat regular, though not constant, type of content, because I think people will appreciate it. And I think we should try to do it in genres that we appreciate. Like, I've always thought that a top 10 trick-taking games from you would be super interesting, because I don't think anybody likes top trick-taking games as you do. So top 10 trick-taking game from Luis? Not so important. But a top 10 two-player game from Luis? Quite good. A top 10 couples games from both of us, I think would be interesting to have. And that doesn't have to be like two-player games. It's just like games that play well for two. And I know that we had a version of that. But yeah, so, okay, now let me hear what you have to say.
I do not object a good top 10 list, especially if it provides some fun content, some interesting content, something that you have not seen elsewhere. The top 10 lists that I don't enjoy that much are those top 10 lists about worker placement games, you know, top 10 worker placement games, top 10 two-player games, top 10 co-op games, because I know it's going to be the same exact list. And there's going to be that test aspect that, as you mentioned earlier, you have to add some of those games and you kind of like end up with the same kind of list. But I think there are ways to add twists to these lists, to make them a little bit more personal.
Yeah.
To make them have like a place in the world and not just like another version of a list that someone else did.
Yeah, true. And I completely agree with you. I still think that top two player list somehow gives validity to like what we have to say and maybe helps us to a certain extent. Maybe this is not what we want at this point, but like gets more listeners that will be like, hey, I agree with Jonas's top 10. That top 10 list of two-player games, which is maybe very similar to what Tom Vassell has to say, which hopefully it wouldn't be because, again, we don't get the same number of games. It would still be like, hey, that's something I hadn't expected. So I want to now try Jonas's number 3 and number 5, which are the only games that I've never heard about before. And now I liked Board Game OK because now I agree with their view of regular games, which, again, I do believe that it will be a lot of that we need to put a twist that hopefully will be more interesting in general. But I think we also kind of have to cover bases, in a sense, by just creating those maybe a bit more boring lists, but hopefully that they will still provide a new perspective.
Another problem that came to my mind is, let's take this top 10 two-player games list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 100% certain that you are able to provide a great top 10 two-player list. My list is going to be something like, well, you got your Patchwork, you have Schottentotten, And those are the only two-player-only games that I play, so I don't know what else to put on this list. Even though we enjoy playing the same games together, our experience outside, you know, our shared table is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And therefore, you know, I'm not able to give that big input for that top two-player, top 10 two-player list. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, then we can do the input as Board Game OK and then create it as a conjoined list that doesn't have to be surprising to each other, but it can be like content that we create and maybe prepare a bit more for the listeners. So, and for example, same. I think we can make the same argument, but in opposed sides for trick taking. Like, I like trick taking, but it's not. So I couldn't provide like a very genuine list of trick taking games that are top 10. Maybe I could come up with top five, and maybe it would be like top five that are like, yeah, no, not that great in the grand scheme of expanded world that is trick taking. But you could. But then if we kind of like just talk about it before and prepare it, like, okay, maybe there can be ways of you are providing the main list, but we are talking about it as Board Game OK.
Well, I think that goes to the thing of like, what kind of takes I'm willing to sign off as Jonas when it comes to Board Game OK. If you are bringing weak sauce for the top 10 two-player game list, I cannot sign that off. I'm going to be grumpy for the whole episode. And when you're going to say, oh, this is Board Game OK's top 10 list, I will be going like, yeah, well, I guess it is, but I don't know. not my top 10 list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I think the fantasy drafts from Board Game Barrage work so well. That they, it's in a way, it's a little bit of a top 10. But they are not signing up or anything. They're just randomly selecting some games that come to their head. And it replaces that quality of top 10.
Yeah, because it turns it into a competition.
It turns into a competition. And it also doesn't have to be like, it's not a top 10. It's like, hey, the draft, the games that I drafted right now within this moment that I will make me win. So that's also like an interesting thing. But again, maybe the top 10 is just like, get it out of the way. Let's put it there. And then when people are looking for top 10s, it's like, oh, they find it.
And I have pitched you one idea for turning these top 10 lists into competition. It's a unique idea. No one else is doing it.
Yeah.
And we could still have our top 10.
Yeah.
We could be a competition.
Yes.
Why are we not doing it, Luis?
I think we were supposed to do it and then we changed the topic last minute. And then we haven't been able to revisit with all the personal things. But yeah, we should definitely do it.
You know, you're the host. You're the main host every second episode. You say just say that, hey, this episode, we're going to do that thing.
Well, yeah, that's what we have to do.
Okay, what top 10 list do you want to take?
I will keep it a surprise for next
time. Okay, great. And we will keep the competition part also as a surprise.
Well, that was our discussion about top X lists officially, but top 10 lists unofficially. I wanted to talk a little bit about top 100s of all time, like, you know, like this classic, or top 50 of all time.
Not my topic.
But that, I think, after you said that you don't like them and you don't hear them, then it's like, what's the point? What's the point of trying to discuss with an ignorant person about a really the gem of content creation? But you're right. We are a different type of podcast and we're trying to do interesting content, and top 10 lists might just not cut it all the time. But every now and then we'll do it and we'll put our own twist, and you'll be probably hearing something about this soon.
Well, I was going to say that, let's see, in 4 weeks, what you will hear. But then I remembered.
Yeah, it's Spiel.
It's Spielessen.
Yeah.
So next episode, we're going to be doing Spielessen preview. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about the games that we're excited about Spielessen. And then after that, we're going to do Spielessen episodes.
Correct.
We might do 2 episodes because I bet there's going to be lots to talk about Spielessen.
Yeah. And then after that, I will probably forget about top 10s again. And then I will come back and complain about it again.
Yeah, so look forward to 2026 Q2 for some great top 10 content.
We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit Board Game OK for more information about the show.
Moi moi.